Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host Mehmet Devrim from the Terrorism Analysis Platform. I want to welcome you to our third and final episode of our podcast series on terrorism in Africa. In our first episode, we discussed the relation between the military coups and terrorism in the Sahel region with Mr. Isidora Aga. In our second episode, we discussed the financing of African terrorist organizations with Mr. Mursal Bayram. Our third and final episode is on the two major terrorist organizations in Africa, Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab. Our guests for this episode are Mr. Tunç Demirtaş and Mr. Zainul Abidin Cibril. Mr. Demirtaş is an assistant professor at Mersin University in Turkey and a researcher at the SETA Foundation. Mr. Cibril is a lecturer at Adamawa State University in Nigeria. Mr. Demirtaş, to get straight into the topic, Al-Shabaab as a subgroup of Al-Qaeda strives for the global jihad more than anything. But at the same time, it's a very local organization that keeps its activities relatively locked into the east of Africa and of Horn of Africa regions. Could you elaborate how that aligns with the fundamental goals of Al-Shabaab, as well as the goals and motivations of its members and recruits?
Al-Shabaab is a terrorist organization with a global purpose, and its primary purpose is to bring Sharia to the world. And Al-Shabaab, also a branch of Al-Qaeda, wants to seize power in Somalia to establish a society based on Sharia law and the Quran. Their main goal is also to destroy all democratic principles supported by Western Europeans. They see democracy as a threat to all Muslim people in the world. The participation of new members in the organization is usually provided by the regions they manage and the local people, therefore, and direct them according to their goals. The primary motivation of the militants is religion. By exploiting religion, he reveals his narrative or narration. There are also examples of this situation. For example, there are members of organization who are initially from Tanzania and joined Al-Shabaab. And there are cases of this person spying for the USA and Rwanda. Al-Shabaab caught such a person recently. And what is said is, when the person who broke into Al-Shabaab and spied on came to Somalia from Tanzania, he first went for the money. Then he joined Al-Shabaab and after started to espionage activities to earn more money. This situation can be associated with one of the chronic problems in Africa. You know, finding a job in Africa can be difficult. Unfortunately, some people see such situation as opportunities. Apart from this, some people may come from neighbor countries due to their religious beliefs. It is possible for people who are exposed to religious discrimination in their country of residence to come from neighboring countries and join Al-Shabaab with jihadist feelings. Those who join Al-Shabaab are predominantly low-income believers, and Al-Shabaab says it fights for all Muslims, regardless of race, color, or age. Since the Somali government has a 4.5 system for clans, some smaller clans seem to be outside or less involved in government bodies. In other words, some groups remain outside the system. They think they cannot express themselves enough. In this case, they may believe that they are more represented by being included in Al-Shabaab. And Al-Shabaab also manipulates young students in madrasas or religious schools. At the same time, most Al-Shabaab fighters are between 12 and 30 years old. Unfortunately, young students who attend religious school or madrasas can be easily manipulated because they need more knowledge and experiences. These young people are shown to show the whole Quran and translate about them half verses or sentences supporting extremist religious ideas and jihad. It should be noted, however, that not all Al-Shabaab militants are Somalis. Some Al-Shabaab militants come from Afghanistan, the Middle East, East Africa, and Europe. Al-Shabaab militants are said to have received $350. This is very good pay and support in Somalia conditions. Also, those who lived in mountains and on the fronts earn higher wages. Sometimes Al-Shabaab gives more than even the Somali government can deliver to the Somali army. But the motivation Al-Shabaab militants is as I said before, mainly based on religion. Due to the foreign Christian AMISOM forces remaining in Somalia, Al-Shabaab shows itself as the savior of the Somali people and the religion of Islam. Since the Taliban took Afghanistan, Al-Shabaab has gained more motivation to do the same. There are three reasons behind the problems that Somalia is experiencing today. In this context, the first reason is weak state capacity or lack of states. The second reason is the problem of terrorism. And the third reason is very high poverty level. However, in addition to current internal reasons in Somalia, the effect of the development in East Africa and the Horn of Africa have undeniably increased. Beginning in 2010, with the support of Africa Union mission in Somalia, which is AMISOM, it has driven Al-Shabaab away from many urban centers in south central Somalia. However, the fact that these gains of Somali government depend on international military support and are fragile shouldn't be ignored. It is also in question whether Al-Shabaab can carry out mass attacks in areas under its control.
Mr. Demirtas, Al-Shabaab has become more active recently, making headlines with major attacks across the country. Did the situation on the ground experience changes, and what kind of factors led to an increase in attacks conducted by Al-Shabaab in recent times? Do the destabilizing attacks have a regional or even global impact?
Al-Shabaab has carried out activities such as the Westgate shopping mall attack in Kenya, and the attacks is carried out by crossing the Ethiopian borders. And they created fear in East Africa countries with these actions. For instance, Al-Shabaab's activities in Somalia have destabilized the region, although it has had no direct impact on Djibouti. Al-Shabaab has potential to affect to other neighboring countries as well. We saw that they did at the Westgate shopping mall in Kenya. They also attacked the Ethiopian border several times this year. And for the most part, some of the Al-Shabaab attackers who fought during these operations were from the clan members of the region. In the past weeks, Ethiopia also caught 100 Ethiopian citizens who wanted to join Al-Shabaab between the Ethiopian border and Somalia. Some other countries, such as Rwanda and Burundi, are also concerned that citizens there may join Al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab wants to expand and export its extremist jihadist idea to neighboring countries to avenge AMISOM's operations in Somalia. Al-Shabaab has recently concentrated its current strength in Ethiopian borders. It is in question whether the forces of the organization, which were dispersed before, will come together shortly, especially in the Bakool region. When the reason for the concentration of Al-Shabaab on the Ethiopian border is examined, the struggle of Abiy Ahmed with the West over the Tigray crisis in Ethiopia comes to the fore. Today, most of developments experienced with the increase of Al-Shabaab activities in Somalia are taking place in the Ato and Ye towns of Bakool province in the southwest states on the borders of Ethiopia. Therefore, as in Somalia, the establishment of terrorist organization in Ethiopia or the expansion of Al-Shabaab's influence into Ethiopia will turn Ethiopia into a weak, fragile and defenseless state. After such a situation, it will be possible to eliminate the crisis of the Great Ethiopian Renaissance Dam built by Ethiopia. Al-Shabaab no borders in the past. Today, however, these borders affect a wider area. Therefore, while the regional powers wanted to realize their interest by using Al-Shabaab, and Al-Shabaab saw that this situation benefited to them. In 2013, Westgate shopping mall attack reflects the organization's capacity for action in different countries. In this attack, the terrorists who dressed like Jews and entered the mall held the mall in their hands for 3 days and didn't let anyone out. Therefore, it has a destabilizing effect on the Horn of Africa, especially Ethiopia and Kenya.
Mr. Demirtas, thank you for these responses. We have one more question in regards to Al-Shabaab. Could you tell us and our audience what are the current counterterrorism strategies in fighting Al-Shabaab, and are they enough to re-establish national and regional security, or are further steps necessary?
No, it's not enough. First, it is necessary to prepare a common strategy to fight Al-Shabaab, and it is necessary to gain national and international legitimacy at the state, local, and federal governance level. Al-Shabaab took advantage of Somalia's lack of a healthy state mechanism and threatened the country and the region. The fight against Al-Shabaab is not only carried out by Somalia government. At the same time, different countries support Somalia in the fight against Al-Shabaab. Countries such as Turkey and the United States sometimes support Somalia's anti-terrorism program. The US had neutralized some Al-Shabaab fighters with drones or other operations. AMISOM and the United Nations are also trying to fight Al-Shabaab directly. However, this didn't end Al-Shabaab. Because to fight Al-Shabaab, the Somali government needs a significant boost in weapons and technology. The United Nations and the United States know that the effort against Al-Shabaab is not enough. However, it continues to repeat the same process without any improvement. Recently, the UN decided to impose a second weapon sanction on Somalia. Al-Shabaab buys lots of weapons, TNT, which is the item used to make bombs on the black market. The Somalia government cannot fight Al-Shabaab well without advanced technology and weapons. The United Nations still imposes arms sanctions on Somalia. Therefore, cooperation between the legitimate government and the international community in Somalia is essential to combat Al-Shabaab. In this context, priority can be given to the controlled lifting of arms embargoes against Somalia. When the war against Al-Shabaab started by the state and Al-Shabaab lost some cities, it increased its attacks on Mogadishu to take revenge. Moreover, Al-Shabaab is increasing its attacks and violence to prove that it is still strong in the face of the state's war against itself and to create fear. The main reason for Al-Shabaab to increase its bombing attacks in Mogadishu is the pressure of the Somali governments against Al-Shabaab as part of the fight against terrorism. Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud has declared war on Al-Shabaab since his second term. The main things that gave Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud the confidence to declare this war was the preparation and successes of the Gorgor militias against Al-Shabaab. In this context, it will also be helpful to provide the following information. Just as Al-Shabaab pays itself high salaries according to Somali conditions to increase participation, the state pays Gorgor soldiers high salaries. In this context also, Gorgor soldiers earn close to $300 depending on their rank. Before Gorgor, there was an AMISOM fighting against Al-Shabaab in Somalia. However, AMISOM was unsuccessful in attacking Al-Shabaab and then controlling the areas they had taken from Al-Shabaab. Because the AMISOM forces couldn't control the places they took from Al-Shabaab, it was in question that they would leave the areas captured by AMISOM one day later and to go to another region without protecting the places they had taken from Al-Shabaab. It then again gives Al-Shabaab a chance to reclaim the territories they lost. The other pressure that Al-Shabaab is currently facing is that some clans are fighting against Al-Shabaab. These clans received support from the Somalia government.
Thank you very much, Mr. Demirtas. Now we are turning to Mr. Jibril, our second guest, and Boko Haram. Boko Haram is an organization that made national, regional, and even global headlines with its activities. Most notably were its kidnappings of young girls from schools. Could you tell us and our audience how that relates to the fundamental goal of Boko Haram and Daesh, Mr. Jibril?
The goals of terrorist organizations may be either religious, economic, social, or political, which influence the choice of their target and methods of attacks. Like the ISIS, whose aim or whose main goal is to create a caliphate in the Middle East, we can see Boko Haram's aim is to eliminate all Western and non-Islamic influences and replace it with an Islamic system in northern Nigeria initially and in the whole of the country later. To achieve the desired change, the group employs violence as an acceptable means to that end. Boko Haram attacks security outfits, religious centers, public places such as markets, and so on. In 2014, Boko Haram started something new, which is the abduction of schoolgirls, the kidnapping was a key event in drawing the world's media attention to Boko Haram. In particular, 276 and 110 schoolgirls were kidnapped in Chibok and Dapchi in 2014 and 2018, respectively. Of note is how the group declared the kidnapped girls as slaves. The Islamic State, or ISIS, praised the abduction of Chibok girls. Since the beginning of Boko Haram's kidnapping, there are hundreds of cases of abduction of girls, women and children in the Lake Chad region, which constitute of Nigeria, Cameroon, Niger and Chad. While Boko Haram used kidnapping for ransom, the abduction of schoolgirls is said to be personally associated with the leader of Boko Haram, that is Abubakar Shekau. Shekau has boasted of abducting women, where he considers them as women not working with Boko Haram to be infidels, and that they can be kidnapped and enslaved. Shekau's treatment of kidnapped schoolgirls and his approval of children to be used as suicide bombers were instrumental to the dismissal of his leadership by the Islamic State, or ISIS.
Boko Haram is a relatively large organization. Most large organizations have multiple factions and alliances, each with different interests. What kind of links does Boko Haram have to other organizations, and does that pose a threat to Nigeria?
Boko Haram and its factions have links with other international terrorist networks, such as Al-Qaeda, the ISIS, and so on. This, of course, provides a way for the groups to build their capacity for more deadly and large-scale attacks, which, of course, is a threat not just to Nigeria, but to West Africa. The network of alliances between different terrorist groups in the Central and West African region has serious implications for security and stability in the region. As a matter of fact, Boko Haram's strategic base and influence in Nigeria are advantageous for terrorist organizations operating in the region.
What kind of strategy is Nigeria following in fighting Boko Haram? Is Nigeria equipped to deal with Boko Haram alone, or is a more international effort needed in order to stop the activities of the organization?
Yes, Nigeria is applying both military and non-military ways in fighting the menace of Boko Haram. Nigeria applies brute force unilaterally and multilaterally. Unilaterally, the government forces work with what is known as the Civilian Joint Task Force to wreak havoc on Boko Haram. Multilaterally, Nigeria has been coordinating its military activities with neighboring countries through the multinational joint task force, comprising of countries mainly affected by the threats of Boko Haram. These countries are Niger, Cameroon, Chad, with Benin assisting. While the multinational joint task force has its lapses, such as financing, lack of coordination, among other things, success has been recorded in the fight against terrorism since the introduction of a new concept of operation to meet the challenge of Boko Haram insurgency in 2015. The multinational joint task force was originally established in 1994. To check cross-border crime and banditry. In the non-military ways, Nigeria, with the help of other aid organizations, are tackling the root cause of the menace, of terrorism, which is poverty, through different poverty alleviation initiatives. The government has also engaged in the rehabilitation of terrorists, where to date, of course, hundreds of terrorists have been rehabilitated and returned to the society. While this is a good strategy, it is discovered that some of the released terrorists returned to terrorist activities. This suggests that the program is not totally successful. Regarding if Nigeria alone can fight the menace of terrorism, the answer is that, not a single country has fought terrorism alone and won. Even the US, as the biggest world power, had to engage in multilateral effort to fight global terrorism. Terrorism now is transnational, where terrorist organizations are linked together. They are linked to like-minded groups in the world. As a result, they assist themselves by providing finances, logistics, and so on. Therefore, Nigeria needs international partners to cripple terrorist financing, to have intelligence on terrorist activities, and also to scout for weapons needed in the fight against terrorism.
Lastly, Nigeria is a large country with various different groups and ethnicities living in it. As such, it's unlikely that Boko Haram is the only threat in the country. Is there any other organization that you would perceive is of similar national security importance, but that does not carry the same weight in Western media, Mr. Jibril?
Yes, Nigeria is a country of over 200 million, with over 300 ethnic groups living together. Often, ethno-religious conflicts arise. We also have the case of secessionist movements in the southeastern part of the country. Apart from that, in the northern part of the country, we have a crisis between herders and farmers, which has degenerated into something. Now we have bandits controlling different areas of the northern part of the country. These bandits, of course, involve themselves in kidnapping of civilians for huge ransom. They also kidnap school children, just like the Boko Haram. Yet, things like this rarely make it to the headlines of Western media, perhaps because the West do not perceive these problems as a threat to their interests.
Mr. Jibril, thank you. With this, we have not only reached the end of the podcast, but the end of our podcast series on terrorism in Africa. I want to again express my thanks to Mr. Isidor Aga, Mr. Mursel Bayram, Mr. Tunç Demirtaş, and Mr. Zainul Abidin Jibril for participating in this podcast series and giving us insight into this topic. I would also like to thank our listeners. I was your host, Mehmet Devrim, and I hope that you tune in for our future podcast as well. See you on the next one.